On behalf of the Professional Baseball Strength and Conditioning Coaches Society, I'd like to welcome you to the PBSCCS podcast. I'm your host, Chris Messina. Everybody, before we get into part two of this episode with Larry and Joey, I just want to give a quick disclaimer that the back half of this episode does have a lot of information that can be found on YouTube. Larry's going to dive into his WHOOP data, and so it may be beneficial to actually go watch this episode on YouTube instead of listening to the podcast.
I want to run with this. That's one of the questions that I had on my sheet is, Larry, you're talking about like tricks, right? Like, is there anything that you guys are using? You know, you're talking about adjusting meal timing, Joey, and just anything that when you're seeing HRV fluctuations or big resting heart rate fluctuations, or just, you know, you guys talk about like potential oncoming sickness based on the data. Like, what are some of the things that you're doing when you're seeing things, you know, go off on the wearables, whether it's yourself or your players? Either way is fine. If you're willing to share.
Oh yeah, well, on a sleep, on a recovery end of things, a lot of that, I think for the majority of people, when I see recovery declining or trending in the wrong direction, a lot of the time it's correlated to their sleep, either consistency, quantity, quality. A lot of times that's more induced by their sleep variables. So a lot of times it's monitoring those. And even within the sleep variables, you got to consider things like watching TV before bed, different blue lights, eating before bed. Because obviously we know eating causes your body has to turn into a state of digesting food, right? It's digesting food, which is actually going to raise your skin temperature. It's going to raise your skin temperature and your body's got to digest the food. So when you're actually trying to go to bed, your body needs to do the exact opposite. It needs to drop 2 degrees. Needs to drop 2 degrees in order to fall asleep, right? So your skin temperature needs to go down. So there's different things that need to happen in order for you to fall asleep that, you know, can be affected by these little things that you do before you go to sleep, not just when you're in bed, right? So obviously we know things like room temperature. There's like these little things that we all know about that we still have to preach to our athletes because our athletes don't know about. So it's just, you know, turn off the iPads, tablets, TVs, you know, within 30 minutes before bed, which is even hard for some people. Don't eat right before bed, you know. When I say right before bed, time window I usually say is an hour and a half before bed. Sometimes for me, I'm not eating two and a half hours before bed. But for some athletes, an hour and a half is fair. Making sure you're sipping water. Some people, I've had athletes say like, oh, I'm going to the bathroom 3-4 times at night when they're trying to sleep, right? And that adds to your disturbances that you'll see on your WHOOP and Oura Ring. They'll say, oh, I had 16, 17, 18 disturbances, which is obviously interrupting your sleep, your quality of sleep. And you'll find that a lot of these athletes are starting to chug water an hour before bed, an hour, 30 minutes before bed, instead of sipping for 5 hours, 4 hours before bed. They're starting to chug water in one big bolus before bed, which is obviously going to force you to use the restroom when you're sleeping, right? So different things like that, trying to sip water before bed instead of chugging it. Room temperature, eating, lights. And then on the other side of things, when you're talking about going to sleep, you also have to talk about waking up. And we talked about getting light in your eyes when you wake up, right? So setting that circadian rhythm by turning light off, right? And your body naturally producing melatonin when it doesn't have this exposure to the light, that melatonin is starting to get in the bloodstream, which is going to put you down and keep you down. And then once you're waking up, getting some natural light in your eyes, which is going to shut that off. So that's two ways to set the spectrum of your circadian rhythm for your athletes. Is just, which obviously we know in season is hard, but even in season when an athlete's like, oh, I'm going to bed at, you know, 3 a.m. or whatever it may be. Well, when you wake up, you can still set that circadian rhythm by waking up and going outside and getting some light. Get out of your bed when you're up and go outside and get some light, right? That's super important.
Yeah, that's all great information. Larry touched on a lot right there. The biggest thing would be, you know, trying to get some of that light in the morning, hydrate, Sleep when you can. Maybe these guys can get a nap in before they show up to the park if their sleep's interrupted. You know, some players will get up, get outside, get some fresh air, get some light, have a light meal, hydrate, and then go back to bed, get up, and come to the ballpark. You know, like Larry said, that's, you know, things that we do, you know, each and every day with our athletes.
One additional thing, too, that I didn't touch on, coffee. Everybody wants to drink, and I've been guilty of this. I'm not even saying I'm perfect at this. People, I mean, for the majority of people, you shouldn't be drinking coffee with an hour waking up. Everybody wakes up and goes right to that caffeine and get that stimulus and get that exogenous stimulus from the caffeine. That's really not what you should be doing. You should be going outside and getting light and then waiting an hour, hour and a half, 2 hours after you wake up to get caffeine in your system, to let your body naturally wake itself up, as opposed to some of this exogenous energy systems or stimulus that you're looking for, right? So some of those things that let your body naturally wake itself up. And I'm also not anti melatonin or magnesium or anything like that. I think for athletes, it's super helpful, because some of them, it's impossible to go to bed after, like, you know, this crazy ass schedule. But I do think in the off season, for a lot of people, they're taking melatonin when they don't need it, which is throwing off their natural ability for their body to slowly reduce that melatonin and fall asleep, right? So I think in the off season, when you don't need it, you should be weaning off of it a little bit, letting your body to naturally produce that melatonin, so it's not ruining that. And you have a bunch of sleeping issues when you really are taking melatonin. Your body, it's already the threshold for it. You need more and more and more of it in order to feel the effects of it, right? So I think during the off season, most people should be staying with the melatonin.
Yeah, great point, Larry. Yeah, definitely the melatonin in the off season is probably not a good idea. You know, in season, you're trying to win ball games, you're trying to get these guys at rest, so magnesium, melatonin. And then one thing, too, we didn't touch on is the sauna and the research that has in the role that has at stimulating the mitochondria and waking the cells up. So one thing that we would do, too, if we have an off day in the city, you know, and we're at the hotel, it has a sauna or a steam room, try to get guys in there, also kind of stimulate the mitochondria, you know, break a little sweat, move around, and then go ahead and take a nap also. I wouldn't recommend that prior to, you know, arriving to the ballpark, but, you know, on an off day, even a post game too, with guys having problems sleeping at night, they can pop in the sauna easily also.
I have a lot of things from this. We're just going to keep going here because I'm taking in a lot from you guys. So, Larry, first, you're talking about like the off season and certain things you should or shouldn't do. And then Joey, you're talking about in season, like winning ball games. Like for me, I think the off season, as little of all the resources that you can use during the season, the more effective they are in the season. Right. And that's not just melatonin. It's like physical therapy, soft tissue work, like seeing athletic trainers, like all of that stuff. Like if you're getting an hour, like shoulder rub down stretch every single day in the off season, when you get to the season, like I personally think you're doomed, right? Like if you can get through the off season using as little as you can while still like maximizing the gains you're trying to make, whether that's in the weight room, on the mound, in the cage, whatever, when you get to the season and you really need to rely on that stuff to get you through, like for me, I think it just makes it that much more effective, right? Like guys hammering like 800 plus milligrams of caffeine in the off season to me is I don't understand it at all. And then you get to the season and it's like, well, I need to double the dosage. And then guys, you know what I mean? Like over 1,000 milligrams, you know, 1500, it's like, what are we doing? Like how, no wonder you can't sleep, right? Like, so tone it down in the off season. And then, you know, when you have to rely on it during the season, rely on it during the season. And then Joey, you're talking about like sauna, and every time we go to a city, Kiyoshi's like, oh, they got a great sauna in this hotel, great sauna. And I never take him up on it. And I really think I need to. I think it's something that I'm missing out on that could really, really help me in the long run. So you have guys that are bought into the sauna as well, not just you.
Yeah. Yeah. There's quite a bit of guys on our team this year that would get up and especially on off day, get outside, move around in and spend some time in the sauna. Yeah, most of the hotels in the major leagues we travel to have great facilities, you know, not so much probably in the minor leagues, but yeah, I mean, there's a lot of benefit to the sauna, even from the mental standpoint and focusing. So a lot of our guys do. We have a sauna at Tropicana Field after the game. Some guys go in there, especially maybe if they didn't pitch that night. You know, we're playing the dome; they didn't break a sweat, so they would go in and spend some time there, 15, 20 minutes, maybe hit the tubs a little bit, and then they're out of there. But it's it's a modality. It has its place, has its purpose. I guess it's another tool, and you can kind of see fit and utilize it when needed.
Yeah, there's no saunas in the Appy League.
not in the Appy. There's a lot of Applebee's and Super 8s, but yeah.
Yeah, you got a lot of clubhouses that could double as saunas though, so that might work.
Yeah, that's true. You bring up an interesting point there, Joey. Playing in the Trop is something that I hadn't necessarily thought to ask you about, but maybe we should talk about too. Is like every time we go to the Trop, I say it feels like it's the void in like space time. Like you don't know what time of day it is. You don't know what the weather's like outside. You have no idea. Like nothing. And then like you walk in and it's daytime. You walk out and it's nighttime. And like you haven't seen like that natural shift from day to night. And obviously you guys play there a lot more than we do. And no offense. I don't like when we go there just because I feel so disoriented. So are there ways that you guys are like mitigating that, or are you guys just like used to it because you play so much there?
I mean, one of the things we do, especially if we have a night game at the Trop and we have a long road trip, 10, 12 day road trip that, or, homestand, we encourage guys to get outside in the morning around wherever they live, around their house, get outside, be active. Some guys do come out into the parking lot, would stand in the sun a little bit, go back inside. So you can take breaks during the day. I know exactly what you need to be indoors, especially on day games. You get there super early, and then when you're leaving, it's 5-6 o'clock at night, and you're like, whoa, and the sun hits you in the face on the way out. But definitely on the day games, some guys would come out. Sometimes we do conditioning outside, just because we don't want to be inside just in 72 degrees all the time. So we try to take guys outside. We've brought bikes outside and had guys just do the stationary bike outside in the sun, in the heat. But either that or just a red light. Some guys have red lights at their lockers and they would just put that on their face, on a day game to kind of wake themselves up, especially if they get there pretty early. But we encourage guys to get outside, get some sunshine, or hit the red light at their locker that some guys personally have. That's a big factor.
Yeah, there's a lot of unique challenges that come with like trying to maintain readiness for players in the big leagues. And I feel like that's just an added wrinkle for you guys, is like trying to navigate being in the dome as much as you guys are and, playing on the turf and all of that stuff. And then the other one is like traveling across time zones. In the big leagues, we're on the East Coast. We go play West Coast road trips. We had a 10-game trip out west this year, and it was like, how fast can we get these guys into a good routine? And then, as soon as you get into that routine and you adjust, it's like, all right, it's time to go back to the East Coast. And, this coming season, I think we have 3 West Coast trips with the new schedule. And I think 2 of them are like, go to the West Coast, come back for a homestand, go back to the West Coast, come back for a homestand. So some of the stuff that you guys recommended earlier, getting sunlight as early as you can, trying to maintain a sleep schedule, being physically active. Would you also recommend that on the, traveling across the time zones, or are there other things that you guys have had success with just making adjustments with time zone travel?
I mean, to a degree, right? But at some point it's like, listen, most likely you're going to be tired. Most likely you're going to be sore. And you still got to play the game. So, I mean, to a degree, you try your best to try to use all these different tools and all these modalities as necessary. But at the end of the day, sometimes you're going to be tired and you're going to have to play through it. Sometimes you're going to be sick. You're going to have to play through it. So we try to, limit, the tiredness, the sickness, working with the time zone as much as possible. But there is still the time where it's like, hey, dig in and go play hard and give us your best effort.
Yeah, I definitely think I haven't dealt with it too much, but there's definitely an element of you're not going to be able to just reset your circadian rhythm when you travel across country for 3 days and then reset it when you come back. Like, there's no element of you're just going to show up, you're going to grind, you're going to play, and then you're going to get your ass back. You know, like, sometimes you just got to make it happen. It's not always going to be pretty. It's just sometimes you're going to have to just grind through it. And hopefully, I think that's like where, and loosely, I think that's where like some of this training and things come into play is like, you've created this variability, this breadth, this bandwidth for your body to withstand some of this abnormal timing of sleep and training and game and response of stress during a game, like adrenaline, things like that. That's what some of this, that's half the reason we train, is so your body can withstand some of this variability and still get back to homeostasis and not completely freak out. That's why we do some of the things we do. People are like, oh, what's this for? It's like, so your body is resilient, like your mind's resilient. So you're not just fragile and you're like, oh my God, I'm on the West Coast, I'm done. Like, no, like you're resilient, your mind's resilient. You're gonna go out there, you're gonna play, you're gonna go to bed, you're gonna wake up the next day and you're gonna do it two more times and we're gonna go home, you know? So there's definitely an element of like, just like mental and physical resiliency that we do when we train that is setting these athletes up for success in these unusual environments. And not just physical environments, like if you're going to Colorado and playing course field and elevation, but just going on the West Coast and time change in the heat, if you're going to New York in April in the cold, if you're going to play in a dome and it's humid, like you're setting your body up to be able to withstand some of this variability that it might experience, whatever the stress is, right? So that's half the work we do is getting these athletes ready for whatever the stress is that we don't know what it's going to be. We're just going to make sure we're ready and we're going to be able to handle it, right?
Yeah, really good point. And that kind of goes back to what I was trying to talk about earlier, is just sometimes you have to train through the shittiness, especially in the off season, just to prepare for the unknowns of the season. And again, this might be another topic for a different day, but some of the training now is getting, in my personal opinion, is getting more like hitting specific and pitching specific. And like, we need to use the water bags for everything and this and that. And like, I think as strength coaches, especially in professional baseball, like there's a big concern for me that we're missing that point of the training that you're talking about, Larry, is like some of the training we do is just for the general physical preparedness and the well-being of our athletes. And, you know, some of that has nothing to do with like how well you swing the bat when you're fresh, right? Like some of that is just learning to train through difficulty and learning to be able to play even when you're fatigued. And, you know, you guys both mention it. And the reality is like guys are going to have to play tired. It's just sometimes that's what happens, right? And you take those West Coast flights and you really would love for them to like take care of their bodies on the plane. And then it's like 3 a.m. and some guys are playing cards or what, you know what I mean? Like it, you can give them all the information that you want and you can educate them to the best of your ability. But at the end of the day, like they have to go out and play and the decisions they make are the decisions they make. Right. And we can try to educate them and we can try to prepare them for all these different angles, but you know, they have to go out. Right. And some guys are able to really grind through that and have some mental resiliency, and some guys it really crushes them. You know, they have a night where they go for four punchies, and then like for the next 3 days they're in the cage, you know, till 1 a.m taking extra swings trying to work on something. And some of it was just they were fatigued, right? Like it's a very skill-based game, and sometimes that fatigue gets the best of them, and you know, sometimes they end up burying themselves even further, and then we have to help dig them out even more. So like I said earlier, sometimes the best thing today is not always the best thing for the next week or the next month or the rest of the season. And sometimes it's hard to differentiate that with guys and like educate them. But I think having some of this data probably helps. And like we said earlier, the guys that have it and the guys that use it, like genuinely want that information. And there's so much information available in baseball, whether it's wearables, whether, you know, you're talking about Kinetrax and Hawkeye data and stuff like that earlier, Larry, like all of that is available. It's just like figuring out which guys need what and how it's going to help educate them so that they're ready to play tonight and then ultimately like the rest of the week as well, the rest of the month, the rest of the season.
Absolutely. And it's so funny because as I'll show you guys later on the Whoop, on the back end of it, when you look at some of the macro data it gives you, you don't have to like tell your athletes that drinking's bad or something like that. Like we all drink and you don't have to tell people it's bad, but I can show you that it takes your body 2 to 3 days to fully recover from an excessive drinking session, right? Like, so people are like, oh my gosh, because they're like, oh, I just feel hungover, I'll be fine tomorrow. Well, no, you're still gonna be dehydrated. Your performance is still gonna be impaired, at least slightly. So there's definitely a little period of decreased performance with some of the habits that some of these people have. And having some of this information will certainly not change their life, but it'll influence them just that tad bit that might go a long way, right?
Yeah, I couldn't agree more, man. I going back to the player that I was talking about earlier that had the Whoop this year, the one thing that I was really impressed with was like how user-friendly it was. So when they came out with like the first generation of Whoop, I don't know if this applied to you guys as well, but we had like a trial with some of the minor league players where they sent it to us. They were testing it out. MLB was like seeing if they liked it, didn't like it. And, you know, at that time I had one as well, and I didn't really like it. I didn't think the data was all that great. I thought it was kind of all over the place. Like some of the guys weren't really big on it. And then, you know, moving forward 5, 6, 7, whatever, however many years ago it was to now, and this player shows me all this data, and I was like, wow, they've really improved this product. And both of you guys have used, you know, some form of these wearables over the last 5+ years, whatever. So talk about like the product growth over time and like how it's helped you as like a user, like to make more informed, educated decisions.
Yeah, I mean, I had probably one of the original Whoops a few years back. And, you know, they have, I see it now, and I see the interface now in the software, and it's, you know, spitting out more information, and it's easier to read. So it's much better. And same thing with the Oura Ring. I had the first generation, and now I think they're on to like the third generation, and they're giving you blood oxygen. They're giving you, it's better sleep quality, better sleep tracking. So I think, both companies are doing a good job. They're updating their software, and they're giving, they're spitting out a lot of information. Like Larry's going to show too later on, like you can really track, 6 months or a year of all of your information. And then you can kind of, break that apart. And so I think, they're both doing a good job, and it's, pretty exciting to, see them both push the limits and see what they can do, in the years to come.
Yeah, the Whoop has definitely evolved a ton. Just from the technology, the hardware itself, and the firmware, all of it's evolved a ton, which is great. And that's what you want as a user. You want it to keep evolving as a sport, and as the athletes keep evolving, and we keep needing and craving more of this information that's giving you, we can make more informed decisions about our life and our training. So it's great. I mean, I love it. I think it's been super helpful for myself and athletes to make a lot of decisions in their life, impacted their careers exponentially.
Guys, I've taken a ton of notes, and there's been a lot of good information. And I know Larry is going to share some of his Whoop data with us. But before we get there, just any like closing remarks, any last things, like anything that we missed along the way in this episode that, you guys just want to make sure the listeners hear.
Just remember that this is another tool, and you can kind of see it how you want to use it with your team, with yourself. But just remember it is a tool, and it's not 100% accurate. But it does offer some guidelines on how you can dictate your day, your training, and so to speak.
Yeah, and I'm gonna mimic those. I agree. Same thing. Just like anything else, it's just a tool for your athletes. It's not a necessity. I think it's something that helps create a better picture. It's just another piece of the puzzle for all your athletes. If someone wants to utilize it, if they don't, it's just a piece of the puzzle. We can still get a really good picture of how healthy households are recovering, their wellness, without having any of this objective wearable data, just based on some of the subjective information, which maybe isn't as accurate, but it might be just as important, right? If someone tells you they're feeling great, like, that means a lot, right? If I wake up and I say I feel great, I'm going to be in a good mood, I'm going to work hard. If I feel like crap, I'm not going to work hard, I'm going to be upset, right? So the subjective aspect of it is almost just as important as the objective information. So, yeah.
Just yeah, good points, Larry.
Yeah. Beautiful. All right, Larry, share your screen. And then while you're doing that, you know, if you're listening on, you know, iTunes or Spotify, I would recommend going to the YouTube portion of this so that you can see the data that Larry's going to share. But Larry, I'm going to give you the floor, man.
Yeah, so I just think it'd be super cool to give you guys like a brief overview of the back end of the Whoop. So you have the information that you can look at on your iPhone or tablet. It's just like a little Snapchat, and that's a little snapshot. But if you go on the on your laptop, you can pull up a more in-depth view of the micro and macro of the day-to-day of your Whoop information. So this home screen, it's pretty much overlaying my recovery scores and my day-to-day strain. So for example, if we look at Monday, yesterday, January 2nd, my recovery after New Year's, after New Year's Day was 83%. My strain that day from workout was a 14, just over 14, 15 or so. So it kind of overlays those, and it's cool to see, just so you can kind of see how your workout was in terms of strain and heart rate. Essentially, it's also measuring strain based on your heart rate over a duration of time, right? So you can look at that on a week scale, a 2 week scale, a month long scale, and then it gets a little convoluted. You can look at it on a 6 month scale, which looks a little crazy, but you can pretty much just go in there and be like, okay, let's see how I've trended over time in terms of that. And then things I like to look at for myself personally are my sleep performance, right? Important metrics for me in terms of sleep. I like to look at my disturbances, how many times I'm waking up in the middle of the night. We'll look at a 1 week scale here. My disturbances over the course of the week. So I can kind of look at the quality of sleep I'm getting. For me, it says right here, my average is 9 disturbances. So I know if I'm getting like 16 or 17 disturbances on Monday night, that's a little odd for me, right? That's a little, I did also see that my strain was really high on Monday. So maybe that played in a role into why my disturbances were so high as well. So it's something I monitor over time is like disturbances, time in bed, sleep consistency. A lot of research is coming out about how important it is to go to sleep at a consistent time, right? So making sure we're in bed at a certain time and waking up at a certain time is going to play a big role into how well what the quality of sleep is with REM and deep sleep. Respiratory rate, how many breaths you're taking. Obviously, this is something that has been popularized by Whoop and Oura Ring as it correlates heavily to some of the symptoms of illness or precursors to illness. Respiratory rate increases. There's a big spike in it before an illness. I can pull back and look at a month-long view here. So it looks like my respiratory rate's been super consistent there. I don't know why. Well, let me go back to 6 months. Otherwise, you'd probably see illness in there where my respiratory rate spiked pretty high. But yeah, there we go. And then another thing that it gives you that's super good to look at and kind of gives you a bigger picture is the weekly and monthly assessments. I'll go to my monthly assessment first here so you can kind of get a look at that. This is where I'll kind of tell you when you have your Whoop on, every day when you open it after waking up, it gives you a little questionnaire. You can set how many questions it is. You can answer everything from 0 to probably like 50 questions about some of your habits from the day before. Did you take melatonin? Did you take magnesium? Did you watch TV before bed? How long was it before you ate before bed? How much water did you drink that day? Was your room cold? Did you sleep in your bed? Did you sleep in a different bed? Were you sick? You know, you can answer a ton of questions, and essentially Whoop is creating a Rolodex of information about your body and your lifestyle that'll help you make more informed decisions about, okay, if I know that I sleep better when my room is cold, I should probably make it cooler. When I am getting sick, I know my respiratory rate usually jumps 2 to 3 breaths per minute, things like that. So at this right now, we're looking at Whoop gives you a recommended amount of sleep per night based on your strain the day before. So you'll see that, like, okay, my strain was, or my my sleep needed the night before this was, or my sleep that I got was 4 hours. For some reason, I got 4 hours or 5 hours on this day. So I'm saying that the next day I needed a lot more sleep, and I did get a lot more sleep the next day. I only got almost 8 hours, but I did get a lot more sleep. And saying that you need a lot more sleep to make up for that sleep loss that I had over this little stretch here. So it's really good to kind of see. It gives you information based on the sleep that you need each day. Kind of scroll through here quickly. This is a year-long overview of my strain day to day. It's kind of convoluted and kind of blurry, but the dark ones are heavy strain days and the light ones are light strain days. So you can kind of look at this and see how many light strain days you had and how many heavy strain days you had over a course of time. Recovery scores, green, yellow, red. As we spoke about, green recovery scores are basically 65 to 100%. Yellow is, I believe, from like 35 to 64. And then underneath 35 is red. So you can kind of see over a year-long view how many red strains or poor strains you accumulated, yellow and then green, right? So I didn't spend too much time in the red, surprisingly, but there's definitely some mixed in there. But you'll, after seeing this, you can kind of come down and see and dig a little deeper and see, okay, I had red scores. Where do these red scores come from? Did the red scores come from sleep performance? Did it come from other external factors, behaviors that I had? You can see that a lot of my red scores were impacted by alcohol use and sickness. And then it kind of comes down here and it tells you, like, oh, things that positively impacted my sleep. When I took melatonin, my sleep or my recovery score was 4% higher usually. Then I can scroll down a little bit lower and see things that negatively impacted my sleep or my recovery score. Sickness, usually my recovery score is a little bit lower. Alcohol, as we know, recovery score is going to be impacted significantly by alcohol use. And I, on average, was 14% worse recovery score when I reported using alcohol. And then it'll kind of tell you from other WHOOP members, they, across WHOOP, most people are about 11% worse when using alcohol. And you can also say how many drinks you use. And it'll tell you, like, okay, like, when you have more than three drinks, your score drops by 15%. If you have 1 to 3 drinks, your score just drops by 5%. So it helps you make more informed decisions on maybe how much alcohol you should or should not be drinking, right? So that overall has some good information. Do you guys have any questions on that at all, or anything you want to talk about or expand on?
I'm just taking it all in, man. I didn't realize that all of this was available with WHOOP. And obviously you've been using it a long time, so you have a ton of information for yourself. But this is like, I'm just sitting here thinking of all the ways that I could, like, use this data for myself and just help myself make even better decisions.
Yeah. And then here's another score. This is, I went to the weekly performance assessment. And this is one laying over day strain on the y-axis and recovery on the recovery of the next night on the x-axis. So fortunately, I kind of hang out in a pretty good spot there. My recovery, my activity strains haven't been overly high recently, just moderate strength training. But when you do incorporate more high intensity cardiovascular activity, your strain will get up and your recovery, you'll see, will trend in certain ways, depending on your fitness level. And then this is always, I primarily love my WHOOP for the sleep metrics it gives me. And you'll see it's kind of laying over sleep consistency on that y-axis and performance on the X. And what you're looking at here is pretty much going to tell you when you're getting a certain percentage of your sleep performance. Like if it's saying I need 10 hours of sleep and I only get 7 hours, that's 70% sleep performance, right? So it's saying, okay, with your sleep performance is 70%, what was your maximal or sufficient amount and how did that cross-section that, right? So ideally it wants you to get at least 75% of your sleep performance and go to bed at a consistent time. So that's gonna say this is your optimal time, right? So basically why all these are pushed over to that right-hand side is I got a lot of my sleep performance. I got there but I didn't go to bed at the proper time, probably, right? So I might have got to bed later, but I got my 8 hours of sleep, right? So I got my sleep performance, but I didn't really go to bed consistently at the same time, is what it's looking at there. And yeah, I don't want to talk you off with all this, but it gives you a lot of good information based on some of your rolling scores. And like we talked about before, it gives you a rolling average based on 30 to 45 days. So it's constantly adjusting and regulating these averages based on some of your new routines, because obviously you're making adjustments and changing habits pretty consistently on a day-to-day basis, or maybe you start a new job, or maybe it's spring training, and maybe whatever it is, you have these acute things or long-term things, and Whoop is constantly adjusting your averages based on that. So if it knows, okay, your average of sleep is 8 hours, and then March 1st hits, and for some reason, the next 5 days, you only got 5 hours, which we know that's spring training. You're just up later programming, assessing, finding these new draft guys, looking at injury evals and medicals, saying, okay, your average, you're now getting 5 hours of sleep. And it knows that, like, okay, something's changing here. So it's like, try to aim for 6 hours now. Don't try to aim for 10 hours, which is what we were telling you before. Right? So it's like, oh, you've been getting 5 hours. Please just get 6 to 7 hours now, right? So it's constantly adjusting based on some of the things that are going on in your life that it might be realizing that are kind of affecting your sleep and recovery.
Yeah, the amount of information. Yeah, man, it's really crazy. I didn't realize it had all of that. And if you would have told me that they would have had all of that when I saw that first generation one, like I said, when we were using it in the minor leagues that year, I would have been like, I don't think it's going to go that far that fast. But it's growing, man. And you know, there's a lot of people using it, and there's a lot of really good information that can help us. It can help our players, or, you know, Larry, you're talking about even corporate life, like just the general population, just giving them the information that's digestible for them, I think is ultimately what's going to, you know, help. And who knows, 5-10 years from now, like where Whoop and Oura Ring and any other new wearable technology will be. And you know, maybe we'll have to do a follow-up episode in 5 years and just see what you guys are discovering through your new wearables then. But in the meantime, guys, this has been really awesome. And like I said earlier, selfishly, I just wanted to talk to you guys because I knew you had been doing it, and I value your opinions and all the information that you have. And I'm sure people will reach out to you guys for more info and to learn more about it. But in the meantime, you know, stay safe. I'll see you guys in spring training. And, you know, thank you so much for all of the information and just being open and honest with me.
First, Larry, thank you guys.
Yeah, appreciate you having us on. Thank you, Chris.
All right, everybody, that's going to conclude part two of this two-part episode with Larry and Joey. I hope you enjoyed both parts one and part two. I would say again, if you didn't get a chance, go check out this episode on YouTube so that you can see all of the Whoop data that Larry shares with us. Three things that I took from the guys in this episode: try to get sunlight as quick as you can in the morning. There are times where athletes are going to have to play through fatigue or sickness, and wearables are only tools to help paint a better picture and should not completely replace subjective feelings. With that being said, I hope you enjoyed this episode, and we'll talk to you again on the next one.